Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we unpack complex ideas into clear, captivating insights. Today, we're diving into a concept that, well, it's pretty familiar in software, but holds this surprisingly powerful, yet often kind of hidden influence over the buildings all around us: technical debt in construction design. Our guide today is this really profound lecture, featuring insights from experts like Dr. John Steele, Professor Peter Jones, and Dr. Derek Thompson.
Indeed. And it's fascinating, isn't it? Because technical debt immediately makes you think of, you know, messy code.
Yeah.
But its presence and, frankly, its huge implications in construction are often really poorly understood. So this deep dive should shed some light on how those early design choices, whether you mean them to or not, can build up this debt that really shapes how a project performs way down the line.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Our mission today is to get a real handle on what technical debt actually is in construction's unique world. Where does it come from? How do we spot the different kinds? And crucially, how can managing it effectively actually lead to better design outcomes? We'll trace its roots, look at the types, find some actionable stuff, and really try to show how each concept kind of builds on the last one. So the lecture kicks off by defining technical debt not just as, like, a handy metaphor. It's more about acknowledging this direct link between early design decisions often made in a rush and the consequences for everything that follows. Think of it like a chain reaction, maybe. Later design tasks are sort of indebted to those initial choices.
Exactly. The concept itself, it came from software engineering, right? It's basically an analogy. It explains how choices you make to speed things up in the short term often make the whole design process more complex and costly later on. Those initial shortcuts, those compromises, they're not free. They embed this technical debt right into the solution as it develops. And eventually, you know, you got to pay it back. What's really insightful here is how sneaky this debt can be. It's often invisible until it's almost too late. It creates this illusion of quick progress. But really, you're just kicking the can down the road.
And what does that mean specifically for construction then? The lecture talks about this common rush to concrete mindset. I mean, the main point of design is to take a really complex problem and turn it into something that's just, well, complicated but solvable, right? So designers reduce complexity by making decisions. But when they're under pressure, limited resources, maybe the client isn't sure what they want. Taking those practical shortcuts becomes really, really tempting.
Which leads to the question, what kind of shortcuts are we actually talking about here? Well, the lecture mentions things like just repeating past design solutions, you know, to get some basic functionality approved quickly by the client. And while that might speed up getting something, anything, built initially, those choices might really box you in later. They can constrain future development and limit how good the overall design can actually be. It's always this trade-off, isn't it? Short-term speed versus long-term performance.
Right. And here's where the lecture really hammers home the actual costs, that rush to concrete thing. It's not just an observation. It actively sets projects up to pile on technical debt. The lecture had this visual, like a graph. Imagine projects loaded with technical debt, just struggling to climb this shallow performance curve. They barely gain momentum. Meanwhile, projects with less debt, they shoot up, achieving way better outcomes. It's like trying to run a race with weights tied to your ankles right from the start.
Precisely. And it's not just some abstract concept floating around. Rushed decisions, or even just poor quality ones early on, put real constraints on the later design stages. And that directly hits your resources. Finite design time gets diverted to servicing the debt, which means working around the limitations from earlier decisions instead of actually pushing the design forward, making it better.
Mm-hmm.
And that inevitably means the overall performance just isn't as good as it could have been.
Yeah, and the lecture points out this is a particularly thorny issue in construction because design work is so often split up, right? Across different companies, different work packages stretched out over time. They describe construction projects as these highly fragmented, temporary multi-organizations.
Mm-hmm. That fragmentation just makes everything harder. It makes the debt harder to spot, harder to manage. And the bigger picture is even things that seem efficient, like using modular components, can accidentally hide important information and the decisions behind it. Same goes for using third-party designs, whether they're standard or specialized. They can bring inherited technical debt with them. So this throws up some big questions for the people integrating the whole design, doesn't it? Like, are they even aware this is a core risk? Are they actively looking for and identifying this inherited debt? And do they know if it's actually helpful debt or harmful debt? That distributed responsibility just makes spotting the debt incredibly complex, often, you know, you only see it in hindsight.
Okay, let's dig a bit deeper into the underlying ideas, the things that explain how this debt actually builds up. First, the lecture talks about design fixity and constraints. So designers define the solution step by step by making decisions. This removes uncertainty, sure, but it also locks things in. It creates constraints.
Right. And what's really key here is the difference the lecture makes. Some information, some decisions, just enable the next steps by providing certainty. Like setting the floor-to-floor heights, once that's fixed, other things can proceed. But other decisions establish inappropriate constraints. They lock things down in ways that cause problems later. The lecture showed how, as this fixity increases, as more things get decided, the scope of what's left to do shrinks. But interestingly, the rate at which you accumulate new technical debt also tends to reduce, which means those key project milestones, like gateway reviews, they're perfect moments to stop, take stock, and figure out what debt you've actually accumulated.
Okay, building on that, the lecture explains how designers are satisficers, which sounds a bit academic, but it basically means in really complex situations, designers show bounded rationality. Their decision-making is limited, right, by the info they have, their own thinking power, the time available. So they often rely on shortcuts, assumptions, repeating things they've done before, just to navigate all that complexity, especially early on when things are still fuzzy.
Yeah, and this isn't just some theoretical point. It's about how humans actually work. Designers, like, well, all of us, tend to satisfice. We look for solutions that are workable, that are good enough, rather than spending ages trying to find the absolute perfect, optimal solution. It's a practical survival strategy when you're drowning in complexity. But it inevitably introduces technical debt into the design as it emerges. The real insight, I think, is not necessarily a flaw in the designer, it's a coping mechanism. And if we don't get that, we'll just keep ending up with systems that are okay, but maybe never truly great.
The lecture also touches on sequencing design to minimize technical debt accumulation. So logically ordering tasks based on how information needs to flow can reduce complexity. It seems like a way to counter some of those satisficing issues and uncontrolled fixity.
Mm-hmm. But thinking about the big picture, lots of design tasks are interdependent. You know, where task A needs something from task B, but task B also needs something from task A. They depend on each other. That makes simple linear sequencing really hard, sometimes impossible. The lecture brings in something called the Dependency Structure Matrix, or DSM. Picture it like a big grid, a map, that shows exactly how every single design task links to every other one. It helps you see all those tangled connections, like untangling spaghetti, and find clusters of tasks that are heavily interdependent. Now, to break up those big, complex clusters into pieces you can actually work on, you inevitably have to make assumptions. There's no way around it.
Okay. So the practical result for construction is that making those assumptions, even though they're necessary to move forward, often leads straight back to technical debt. Like maybe over-specifying something pessimistically, just making it stronger or bigger than it probably needs to be, simply to allow another task to start without waiting for the final details. That adds cost and maybe limitations later.
Exactly. It just reinforces this tight link between assumptions and repaying technical debt. No matter how practical those assumptions seem at the time, they create a form of debt. And as this debt builds up, it needs active servicing, which means design time and effort gets spent working around or accommodating those assumptions. Now, in software, they have this idea of refactoring, basically restructuring the code to make it better designed internally without changing what it does externally. But in construction, with its linear process, contracts, potential for disputes, you can't just refactor a whole building design easily. So instead, we have to continuously manage the debt as it builds rather than waiting for some big crisis-driven overhaul. That's a really key difference.
Right. And the lecture then details all these different causes of technical debt, everything from that industry rush to concrete thing to the way designers naturally satisfice. And this leads to a really useful way of classifying technical debt based on its impact. Is it helpful or harmful? And how it got there, was it intentional or unintentional?
Yeah, this classification is really helpful because it highlights that not all technical debt is actually bad. So first, you've got intentional, helpful technical debt, sometimes called planned technical debt. This is where you deliberately embed sensible assumptions or maybe use standard solutions that genuinely cut down uncertainty, fit the project's goals, and actually speed up the design in a smart way. It's like a useful tool, and you don't really need to repay it.
Okay, that makes sense, like a strategic shortcut.
Exactly. Yeah. Then there's intentional, harmful technical debt. This is where designers knowingly accept a suboptimal solution or make rushed assumptions that they know might compromise the design's integrity or how well it meets the original intent. The lecture gave an example. Maybe designers deliberately push decisions about passive fire protection down the line, kind of expecting the contractor to sort it out later. This stuff has to be repaid, It directly takes resources away from developing new parts of the design, showing that negative impact of cutting corners earlier.
Right, paying the price later.
Then you have unintentional harmful technical debt, sometimes called ignorant technical debt. This just pops up when a designer simply isn't aware of the knock-on effects of their decisions for later tasks. Maybe they lack experience, or it's just that satisficing heuristic kicking in again. You can't really document this when it happens because nobody realizes it is happening. So you have to find it later, retrospectively. In software, they talk about code smells as indicators. In construction, tools like that dependency structure matrix become really vital for uncovering these hidden harmful dependencies.
Okay, the hidden pitfalls.
And finally, there's unintentional helpful technical debt, or lucky technical debt. These are just fortunate decisions, choices that, by chance, happen to establish useful certainty or simplify things down the line, even though the designer had no idea at the time. Obviously, you can't plan for luck. But identifying these happy accidents and communicating them can still be valuable.
Got it. So four distinct categories. But the lecture gives a pretty stark warning about the harmful types, right? It says if you leave harmful technical debt unaddressed, it just keeps piling up until you hit a crisis point. At that stage, pretty much all your design effort is just going into managing the mess from past decisions. The whole project basically grinds to a halt, like being stuck in quicksand, yeah.
Absolutely. And stepping back, think about the impact on productivity metrics, things like percentage plan complete or PPC, which teams use to track progress. Sure, intentionally taking on some debt might give you a short-term boost in your PPC figures. That's good for a week or two. But the medium to long-term reality is a drop in PPC because teams get bogged down having to work around and repay that debt. And that creates this nasty downward spiral. Stress goes up, efficiency drops, people get disengaged.
So the practical question for construction is, okay, if we can't easily do a massive refactoring like in software, what can we do? The lecture suggests the only real option is continuous management. You have to keep chipping away at the debt. That means actively repaying harmful technical debt in smaller, manageable chunks, integrating that repayment work into the normal workflow. The lecture showed an idealized graph, a pattern for managing debt accumulation to sort of protect the design's integrity without needing a full stop and restart. Okay, so continuous management is key. And the lecture wraps up with some concrete recommendations for setting up a more robust design management system. It starts with figuring out where your organization currently sits, maturity-wise, regarding technical debt, moving from just being unaware to having it properly institutionalized.
Right, so how do organizations actually make that journey? The lecture laid out a few key steps. Recommendation one, establish a common language of technical debt. Just changing how people talk about these issues can make a big difference. Shifting from purely technical jargon to maybe using more financial vocabulary, talking about debt, repayment, servicing it, gives a clear framework. It helps address things like complex design architectures, the smart reuse of good enough elements, and the risks that come with inherited designs. It really starts with changing the conversation.
So getting everyone on the same page using the same terms.
Yep. Exactly. Recommendation two, make technical debt more transparent and focus the repayment. This means organize the design process so that if you're going to accumulate debt, you do it where it's necessary and helpful and you make it visible. Implement ways, maybe using that DSM tool again, to actually capture and ideally quantify the debt. Track when it goes in, track when it gets paid back. And a key question to ask becomes, is the cost of over-designing something slightly, which avoids making an assumption actually less than the potential cost of rework if that assumption turns out to be wrong.
That's a crucial calculation.
Definitely. Recommendation three, keep a ledger when intentionally incorporating technical debt. If you are making a conscious decision to take on debt, making an assumption, using a shortcut, document it right then and there, this debt list acts as a register, helps you monitor the debt and make sure it gets addressed before it becomes a major problem. And crucially, identify who originated the debt and who owns it, who's responsible for dealing with it. That accountability piece is really important and kind of different from the self-admitted debt often seen in software just because of construction's documentation culture.
Right, clear ownership.
And finally, recommendation four, elicit patterns and develop tariffs. This is more at the organizational level. Look across projects and identify common design patterns or situations that regularly lead to harmful technical debt. Then try to pre-calculate typical technical debt correction tariffs. Basically, estimate the usual time and cost involved in fixing that specific type of debt. Having these tariffs allows for much smarter prioritization of design effort, and it really helps to institutionalize the management of technical debt across the whole organization, not just project by project.
Okay, those are some really practical steps. So just to recap this deep dive into the impact of technical debt on construction design performance, we've certainly covered a lot of ground.
We really have. We started by getting a handle on what technical debt actually is, that often hidden trade-off between getting things done quickly now and the costs that pile up later, borrowing that really effective analogy from software. The key takeaway there, I think, is that it's not just a metaphor, it's a real drag on how efficiently projects run.
Then we looked at why it's such a big deal, linking it to that rush to concrete mindset in the industry. And we saw how it pulls valuable, limited resources away from actually improving the design, forcing teams to just service those earlier compromises. It really highlighted the sneaky nature of those deferred costs.
Mm-hmm. We also dug into where it comes from, looking at core ideas like design fixity, how decisions lock things in. And the fact that designers naturally satisfies in complex situations, which isn't a flaw, but a human reality. Plus the challenges of sequencing tasks that depend on each other, especially when you have to make assumptions to keep things moving. Those underlying mechanics really explain how this invisible debt grows.
And we got that clearer lens for looking at design choices by classifying technical debt helpful versus harmful, intentional versus unintentional. Realizing that not all debt is bad gave us a much more nuanced picture of something quite complex.
Absolutely. And finally, we talked about practical strategies and those specific recommendations for actually managing and reducing harmful technical debt, emphasizing transparency, accountability, and that crucial idea of continuous management, which is quite different from the sort of crisis cleanups you might see elsewhere. That showed us how to apply all these concepts in the real world.
Yeah, this deep dive really showed that every single design decision, big or small, sends ripples outwards. It shapes the project's efficiency and effectiveness long after that decision is made.
The challenge then, but also the opportunity, is really about building an environment, a culture, where technical debt is understood, it's acknowledged openly, and it's managed proactively.
Oh.
Rather than letting it just be this unseen burden that quietly sabotages project success.
So maybe a provocative thought to leave things on today, thinking beyond just construction. How might being aware of technical debt change how you approach any complex project you're involved in? Could it help build not just better structures or products or systems, but also more resilient and effective processes along the way? That's all for this deep dive. Join us next time for another exploration into topics that help us all become a little more well-informed.